Well, I'm Daryl, compulsive overeater, and gosh, my first exposure to the fear of inventory was this very meeting 37 years ago or thereabouts. And they were on the step that we're on tonight, and I was a newcomer. And that evening, the leader said, "Well, let's go around the room and each share one of our fears." And everybody was sharing their fear, and I couldn't come up with one. And I finally blurted out that I was afraid of snakes. And the irony of that is that probably at least half of my writing since then has been on fears that that they would constantly crop up and in my life. And so before program, I obviously was suppressing my fears. I was otherwise I would have been able to share a fear. But I actually come from a fear-based family. My mom's side of the family, they had come to this country a little after the turn of the century, the last century, and they had settled in Pennsylvania, and there was some sort of an incident that involved one of their older sons, and they were so afraid that they were going to get deported that they moved to Arkansas. The whole family, they just moved to Arkansas. And it was just that fear that made them move, and that's one of the things that I had learned to suppress was fear, because I was subjected to it constantly. My mom and her sisters, who all lived in the same neighborhood we did, are very fear-based people. And so for me, that was the best way to do it was just to go into denial. And I had obviously had been doing that for some time. And so that when I got confronted with the idea that I was had to come up with a fear, I had a real tough time doing it. But I don't today, for sure. And the fear part of my program was really resolved around the fear inventory that we're going to use tonight. And it's by far the simplest of the inventories. And it only has three columns in it. And did you want to show the inventory form? Can you do that? There we are. These are the three columns: the fear, why we have it, and what is the solution. And the book has a spoiler in it because it tells you what the solution is. It's trusting God. And the one thing that I found that was really helpful in working with this, though, was to take that third column and to put a heading on that, right under what is a solution. I would put my footwork, and because I found that it would be too easy for me to just say, "Oh well, just trust God," and that was so close to being back in that denial thing that I didn't think that that was really the way that I needed to go. So I needed to be able to do the footwork and do whatever I could do towards the solution. And then when I ran out of ideas, why then that would be up to God then for however it was going to turn out. And so the fear inventory is the fear is not only there a concern because it could cause us to eat, but it's also a concern because it can cause us to react in unhealthy ways and to act out on the fear and make a There's that acronym, fear is false evidence appearing real. And that's there's a lot of truth in that, and and it's false evidence. So it seems like that this is something that's that we need to be afraid of. And then of course, when we make that fear real by acting out on it, and like my family did when they moved to Arkansas, they made the fear real by moving to Arkansas. And so if I make the fear real by acting out on it and treating it as though it is real, and then it sets in motion things that are not going to be healthy for me. And it kind of burrows in with that fear of getting having that extra power in my life. I remember, I don't know if they still do, but at Disneyland, they used to have a show that, gosh, I can't remember what they called it, but it was there in the where they had the river in the New Orleans Square, that area there, and they had Mickey Mouse as a magician of some sort, and he's up against this huge dragon or monster of some kind, and it turns out that this dragon that looked so huge, and it really did look huge, but it was projected on water vapor, and that when they turned the water vapor off, the thing just disappeared. It just kind of, and I always thought about that as the way that fear was in my life, that the fear was there. As long as I kept feeding it, it got bigger and bigger. But once I stopped and refused to do that and did my writing, because the writing was really important, and then the fear subsided, and I was able to negotiate life in spite of fear and in spite of the fear. And the reading tonight talks about courage, and yeah, that is part of it, that we do gain courage, not only from the program, and not only from the steps, but also from the process of doing the writing and getting it down on paper, and being able to really look at it in detail, and then finally being able to share it with somebody else who has a whole different point of view and an objective point of view that might be able to show us things about it that we weren't necessarily aware of. And so the first column is really an important column, because it causes us to name the fear. Because I don't know about you, but I would have times when I would wake up, and I would feel that there was a sense of impending doom. Something bad was going to happen. I have no idea what, don't know why, but something bad was going to happen. I just had that feeling, and that's a fear. And so for me to sit down and get the paper out, and the first and most important thing for me to do is to identify the fear. What is it, and where's it coming from? And sometimes I had to journal to kind of smoke it out, that it wasn't apparent. And so then I would write what my fear was, whatever it turned out to be, and then that second column, why I have it, and that's the column that I would also spend extra time on, is to why. What is it about it that makes me afraid, and what am I afraid that's going to happen, and then finally in the final column, well, what is the solution? Well, remember I had mentioned about the footwork, so let's say that it's a medical thing. that I'm afraid I have I'm getting cancer. I have a sore that just won't heal up. Well, the footwork would be to go have it checked out. Go to a doctor and have a medical authority look at it, and they'll tell you whether you have a problem or not. And but I mean that's an oversimplification, but it's the idea is doing that. I remember when I first came to program, when I was still in business, and part of my job was to arrange for the raw materials to be there during our busy season. And our busy season was really highly seasonal, and we needed containers or to supply containers to our customers, and some of them were very big customers. And I got so caught up in the program that I forgot to take care of business. And one day it just dawned on me. I just broke out in a cold sweat practically. I said, "Oh my gosh, I haven't arranged for the my raw materials, and the season is right around the corner." And I got panicky, and oh my gosh, what a disaster this is. And I started really going down that road. And then I remembered, oh wait, I have my fear inventory. So I wrote out the fear. Fear was I wasn't going to have enough material to supply my customers, and I would lose my customers. And so then the and I have why I have it because I would lose my customers. That would be one of the outcomes of it. And but for somebody like me, it would also make me look bad and dumb and all that stuff. That would have probably been in that column. But then, what is the solution? Well, is to start calling around and call these guys that I hadn't called yet, and let's just see what I can come up with. And that's what I did. And so once I started doing the footwork, things started falling in place, and I ended up getting enough raw material for the season. I don't know if I would have if I hadn't if I hadn't taken the that third column seriously and doing the footwork. And that's and so it's not that God's there to just solve our problems for us, but we need to be participants in this process too. And the program helps us do that. I think that one of my biggest fears that I remember, I had left the business world and was studying to become a therapist. And so to become a therapist in the state of California, you have to have 3,000 hours that are supervised hours of counseling people and that. And then you have to pass two tests. One's a written test, and the second one was a oral test where you had two people that were grilling you on a certain aspects of therapy. And I remember as I was coming through getting down to getting close to taking the exams, that I was, needless to say, I was concerned about passing the written one. But the written one, when I took it, I passed it. It was one of those instantaneous things. When you push the button, it tells you whether you passed or not. So I passed that one. But the oral exam was a little bit different. And what they would do is they present you with a single sheet of paper that had a case a case history on it, and you had 7 minutes to read the paper, take notes, whatever you wanted to do. And then they would question these two therapists who were examiners would question you on how you would handle that case. And if you missed a crucial item in there, for example, if there was a hint of child abuse and you didn't see it, you flunked. And You had there were certain things that you had to be able to see in these case histories, and of course they knew what they were, but you don't. And so as I was getting ready to, I had taken a course. Part of my footwork was to take a course in how to pass this test. And there were other people that were taking the course that were in the same position that I was. And the pass rate for the course was 33%. So 2 out of 3 people did not pass the test in any given year. And so as I was preparing for it, there were a lot of guys in my class, a lot of people in my class that were taking it for the second, third, and fourth time, and they had flunked it several times. And and getting to know these people, I realized that the fear was kind of running amok with them, that the that they and I remember going out to lunch with two of them who had flunked it several times before. And they were and they were telling me all this negative stuff, and I, of course, I had been doing my fear inventories right along, and I wasn't in the same place. I didn't have that that overriding fear going into it. And I remember that just before I went out the door, I had a God box in those days. I remember writing the fear inventory, but just in a really a short abbreviated form, and dropping it in the box, and basically telling God that I knew that even if I flunked, that didn't mean he didn't want me to be a therapist. It just meant that he wanted me to learn something more, and that so I really felt fine, and I get down to the place, and the examiners are just like they told us, so they're very heartless and cold-blooded, and they wouldn't give you the time of day. Well, God took care of that for me. He gave me one therapist that looked just like Maria from Program, and Maria S. And I said, I'm just because she looks just like, I'm going to pretend that's Maria S. And I'm going to talk to her. And so when I answered the questions, I always directed it to her, and I felt very comfortable in doing that. And so then the other part was that the case history that they gave me, if you could believe this, that it was a case history that had a 12-step aspect to it. It was a fellow that was a former alcoholic who isn't showing up for work. And he's missing work, and he's being flaky on the job. And I was able to say, well, I would want to ask whether he's calling his sponsor, and I'd want to know if he's still going to meetings. And so it was just like my fears just evaporated, obviously, once I saw the case history that I had, and that. But if I had gotten letting myself get worked up, if I didn't have the fear inventory to get that problem, get it down on paper, that I could have worked myself up into almost a panic mode, as some of those other folks were, as I was going into that that examination room, and that's the way that that fear works, is that it gets us in that can get us into that fight or flight mode, fight, flight, or freeze mode, and to where where our instincts take over, and not in a good way. And yeah, the fear can be a survival technique when the fear is real. If you're getting chased by a lion, it's good to be afraid. Makes you run faster. But when the fear is something that I've determined in my head, that it's there, and it's that false evidence appearing real, then I need to get it down on paper. Now, the advantage of writing is that if I just leave this in my head and I'm trying to deal with this fear in my head, it's like a squirrel cage. It's going to go faster and faster and faster. I'll have these runaway thoughts that are not going to be good, and they're not going to help me come to a solution or any type of serenity in this situation. But if, on the other hand, I get out my fear inventory and I write it, the fear has a beginning and it has an end. It's laying there right in front of me on the paper, and it has a solution on that. Now, the trick is, can I buy into that solution? Now, if I've taken steps two and three, I should be able to buy into a solution of trusting God. If I can't, then I got to turn back to two and three, and I've got to take another look, because I'm coming up short there in an area that I can't afford to come up short. I've got to be able to trust God, and it's pretty, not only in terms of the fear inventory, but just in terms of working the steps of the program and practicing these principles in all of our affairs, that we need to be able to trust God. If we have a God that's untrustworthy, we've got a problem. I had a guy once that he was describing the God that he had, and this God was giving him a bad time, and it was and I told him, I said, you got to get rid of that God. That's not the right one, and you have to get one that's modeled in the pages of the Big Book, I think. And for me, that was what worked for me, was the fact that I knew that there was a higher power. He had stepped up when and performed a miracle for my second step. And then in the third step, I had learned. The third step was more of a learning step for me. Second step was one was a miraculous step. I saw the miracle in the moment, and was able to see God in that moment too. And so I came to believe at that point in time, and I haven't had any reason to back off of that. But the third step is actually the action step of turning my will and my life over to the care of God. That was a lot tougher for me, but you have to be able to do that. So that third step is really important. And one of the things that I remember from that early step study was that there was a lady that came. And she was relatively new too. And she shared, when we were talking about the third step, she shared, this was after I'd been there for a while. It wasn't the first time I heard about third step. I'd been there probably about a year or so. And she was sharing about the third step. She said, but she was sharing about fear, and she was sharing, you remember, anxiety is a form of fear. So if we're talking to anxiety, she said that whenever I'm feeling anxious about anything, that it's like an alarm going off, and it's telling me that I have a third step problem. And that has been so helpful to me over the years, that just knowing that if I'm feeling anxious, if I'm feeling afraid, then I've got a third step problem. And that's because my security needs to be in my higher power. And if it's not there, I'm going to be afraid. And I should be afraid, because then I'm on my own. If I'm not able to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, then I'm out there all by myself. And that this self-realization, self-actualization, and things like that you hear as kind of like modern tools of modern psychology and stuff, they don't work for a guy like me. I need to have a higher power that's going to show me each step of the way what my job is, what he wants from me, and he's got to give me the grace to do it. It's like that I am powerless, but I need to be able to be willing to do it his way, whatever that might turn out to be. So doing the fear inventory is doing it his way. So it's getting me, it's having me look at the fear, it's having me examine it in detail, why I have it, and then it has me cooperating with my higher power by doing the footwork. But then finally, when I've done that, I just am going to surrender, and that's going to be the next step. And surrender implies humility, and that's a really important aspect of every step in the 12-step process, is that idea of moving towards humility. I think in the book it says that humility is the foundation of each step. If you think about the different steps, any of them, and you realize that as you take that step, that you're going to find that that it's a step away from doing it yourself, and it's a step towards turning it over. And anyway, but that's we'll get into that at a later time. But the inventory, the fear inventory, is a way to deal with the day-to-day things that fears that come up. We learned about how to do the resentments last week, and so now we have these fears that come up. And now I don't know if any of you have ever experienced panic disorder. Panic disorder is fear, and it actually as it can actually cause physical things. You can think you're having a heart attack. You'll feel chest pain, and that's fear. That's fear doing that. That's a, you know, and you and what happens is you start feeling all this. Oh no, I'm having a heart attack. You go to the hospital and they run all these tests and there's nothing wrong with you, and so and that's and it's just fear. And so we don't have to live that way. We have the, these tools built into the steps that show us a way to not have to let the fear run amok in our lives and to cause us to have physical symptoms that are just as false as the false evidence appearing real in the fear itself. And so I think I've covered it pretty much. It's a simple form and a simple format. So let's take a little time for questions.